The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me today are certified financial planners Craig Konstantinovich and Cameron Utley. And today we're talking about the Fed's influence, why lower mortgage rates can mean higher bank rates, and a few other things. I want to explain to people what the Federal Reserve does first.
Yeah, so basically what happens when the Fed starts talking about what they're going to do with interest rates, they're talking about the Fed fund rate. So basically that's what rate is applied to banks exchanging money or making money accessible between different entities or different banking institutions. A lot of times people coincide that information with things like treasury bills or treasury notes, investments that are interest bearing based off of the federal government, because that rate usually is based off of the Federal Reserve rate plus or minus a percentage. So a lot of times you'll hear Federal Reserve rate, you'll hear the prime rate. A lot of those are synonymous together. But basically what you're looking at is, so, you know, if let's say Bank A wants to go out and they want to offer up a brand new mortgage program and they don't have, based off of the banking laws that were put into place after 2008, they don't have enough assets on hand to offer another $100 million worth of loans to consumers. Well, they can borrow money from banks B, C, D, whatever, at an agreed upon rate. But again, because this isn't something where it's just, oh, we'll act in good faith, we'll just pass this money along. No, banks need to make money off of what they're lending at that point. So they charge, when you apply for your mortgage, your prime rate plus whatever percentage they may choose. Sometimes it's 1%, 2%, 3%, whatever. But that's how your mortgage rate is calculated. So the lower that the Federal Reserve rate goes, the lower your mortgage rate's going to be, but there's still going to be a premium baked into that based off of what the bank needs to continue to make money and pay back not only their debts, but also keep enough cash on hand to help out with any other debts that they may offer, make sure they have sufficient funds for deposits, all those kind of things.
This is kind of econ meets financial planning. We'll get there. But how do they come to the percentage? Is it based on the estimation of so many loans?
Or which percentage?
How do the banks come to set that rate for people? How does that happen? Is it based on previous numbers of loans in the nation? Or, I mean, is it just a...
You mean the essentially the juice or what the bank makes at that point? Mm-hmm. Well, they all do it based off of how they can be competitive. So certain banks, you know, again, they're vying for everyone's money to borrow. So usually you have credit rating information. That's why you always have a credit report that's run on consumers. If there's a higher risk or if there's less opportunity there, then your interest rate may be higher because, hey, we're taking more of a risk giving you this loan. Whereas if you've got good credit history, if you've got good credit information, if you're a good borrower on paper, they may offer you a lower rate. So it just kind of depends on where things are at. But it's not just mortgages that are impacted by this. It's also savings or CDs or other bank-provided interest-bearing investments that are impacted by the Fed fund rate.
Does this impact the credit card industry at all?
Yep. So like the credit card and most debts outside of mortgages are usually following that prime rate.
Okay.
So that's how the fluctuation of that usually determines the fluctuation of credit card rates, for your example.
Yeah. So it'll impact things like credit cards, student loans. It'll impact car loans. you know, it has a ripple effect. It does impact multiple areas of financial planning, but just to understand kind of the bare bones basics, that's where, you know, again, in rising interest rates, you know, like we experienced during 2022, during rising interest rate time periods, normally people are trying to lock in rates at a as soon as possible. Whereas like during the pandemic, we had falling interest rates. Well, at that point, everyone's kind of sitting on pins and needles trying to figure out, well, when's the bottom going to hit? Because, you know, that was one of the first instances in a long, long time that we've seen people get mortgages for sub 2%.
I was going to say, you remember those 1.99%?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone remembers 0%
car. Will we ever see that happen again, do you think?
In all honesty, I hope not.
Probably. That represents a bad time in the economy.
It doesn't necessarily represent a bad time in the economy. What it represents is the fact that, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's not a lot of optimism in what the immediate future may have. And so basically by the Fed reducing rates, they're lessening that burden on banks to change funds between hands. And, you know, to get mortgage rates down at 2%, that means there's not a lot of wiggle room. So that way, if the economy is continuing to suffer for an extended period of time, the Fed has lost one of their tools to impart their say-so on the economy.
I was going to ask, why should people care about these decisions? But it's kind of, my brain is already formulating the reason. But let's say it out loud. Why should people care when the Feds adjust the rates?
I think the most obvious one is from, you know, what happens to your wallet when interest rates go down. You know, for a lot of people, they think when interest rates go down, oh, I can get a cheaper mortgage. You know, instead of 6%, I can get it at 5.5%. Well, if you did the math and talked to your broker about it, that could mean maybe a couple $100 a month, depending on the loan you have. Right? For people who are in bad credit card debt, the thing about credit cards is that it's not a fixed rate. It's very, most credit cards are variable. So if you're at 25%, you might wake up the next day after the Fed cuts rates and you might be down at 20%, which might mean, again, it could be a substantial, you know, reduction in your monthly payment, help you get out of credit card debt faster. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's not only the debt factor. I mean, we keep talking about mortgages, auto loans, mm-hmm. even student loans, for instance. Those are fixed based off of when you lock in that loan. So depending on where rates are at, student loans are also impacted by the federal funds rate. But on the flip side of it, like we also saw in 2022, it impacts the investing world and it impacts the deposits and savings world. So when you have rates that are rising, rates and bond prices have an inverse relationship. So when rates are going, So when rates are going up, bond prices go down. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, if rates are going up, and let's say I wanted to buy a 10-year bond. And here I am today, I can buy a 10-year bond that's paying me 5% interest. Well, 6 months from now, let's say rates are going up and it's gone up another percent. Well, now I can buy that same 10-year bond 6 months later and I could get 6% interest. My 10-year bond at 5% doesn't look as attractive anymore because there's a higher interest-bearing investment that's the same kind and quality. So by all means, I'm going to go and I'm going to try to get a greater yield on my bond.
Right.
So it's one of those things, too, where the fluctuation in that can have a big impact on things. And that's where, like in our world, there's a lot of conversations. There's a lot of articles, a lot of information around this retirees portfolio. The death of the 60-40 portfolio was something we saw a lot in 2022 as the Fed was raising rates, because that 40% that's in bonds, like a lot of retirees have, well, that was being negatively impacted by the Fed raising rates, because bonds that you had in that mix were likely paying lesser than what new bonds being issued were able to provide. So it does have a larger ripple effect on things, but the biggest piece to it all is this is all cyclical. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's going to be periods where the Fed is going to raise rates. There's going to be periods where the Fed cuts rates. So just understanding that, yeah, we may feel some short-term impacts doesn't mean that it should change your long-term outlook.
That's a good point. So you kind of got my attention with the student loans. So if you're locked in at 6%, mm-hmm. you're locked in, mm-hmm. unless you're getting a new student loan. So that doesn't impact people who have current student loans. It impacts people who are getting and applying for student loans.
Correct. And okay. the way that student loans work, too, it's usually you don't just walk in there and say, hey, I'm going to go for 4 years to this institution, just pay all of my student loan money out to me now. No, normally you have to apply, if you need it, every single semester. So every 6 months, you're essentially going out and saying, I wonder what the rates are now. So, a 0.5% of a rate cut is not going to necessarily change things dramatically from semester to semester. But like I said, in 2022, when you had rates that were being raised almost every single time the Fed sat down and had a conversation, you may have started off the year at a 6% interest rate, and you may have your first loan for the following year of 2023, that may be locked in at almost 8-9%. So it can have a bigger impact.
Okay, on the personal side, as this is happening, as interest rates rise and fall, what can people do to basically prepare? Any best kept secrets?
I don't know if there's any best kept secrets. I would probably say that I would probably approach it by trying to not pay as much attention to it and not be driven by, we say it with, you can name X, Y, and Z with, and any other topic, not be driven by the news of today. When, to your point, if the financial plan's done correctly, done properly, we're not looking at the next 6 months or the next year. We're looking 20, 30, 40 years away. And I'd be willing to bet with both of you that we're going to forget that, one, we had this conversation. Maybe not. It's a good conversation. But
it's recorded, Cameron. Come on.
We're probably going to forget, whatever the next Fed decision is. We're, 20 years from now, we're not going to have any clue when they did that, how much it was, unless we went back and Googled it.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's not that relevant to remember that far from now, we shouldn't be focusing on it today.
Does this impact the job market at all, like minimum wage or, any kind of, from the business perspective, how they address wages?
Not necessarily wages directly, but what it does impact is, business is typically a good business plan involves properly leveraging yourself with debt. So in periods where there's high interest rates, banks are going to be less inclined to go out and secure a boatload of debt to pay for higher wages, to pay for research and development, to pay for all of those things. No, they're probably going to shy away from that and say, if we've got cash on hand to do it, sure, but we don't want to borrow money in order to do that. So normally when interest rates are lower, there's more free-flowing money, more opportunities for businesses to take advantage of it. They may be more inclined to start a hiring operation. They may be more inclined to do more recruiting. They may be more inclined to do that big project that they've been contemplating because now they can leverage themselves in the right way without taking on too much risk.
And on the unemployment piece, I'd ask you, Tracy, let's say unemployment's high. As if you're in that bucket of the unemployed, what are you least likely or less inclined to go and do? Probably spend money. You don't have it. You're not employed, don't have money to spend. Well, then the Fed may look to, if there's a big chunk of the economy not spending, mm-hmm. and they want to bolster a strong economy, mm-hmm. they might look to lower rates because it makes it cheaper to borrow. It makes it inclines more people, more businesses to go out and try to borrow money.
Spend more.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's amazing. You don't think about those things. That's why you're certified financial planners, and I'm not. The housing market is kind of crazy right now. It's been that mm-hmm. way for a while. I'm curious to understand. You've alluded to the interest rates affecting mortgages, but what does it do to the industry in the future, if anything, when this happens?
I think the world we live in, I think interest rates could go up, down, sideways, as long as, we, not to talk too broad of an economy, but I think the bigger issue is this issue of supply versus demand. There's still a lot of people who want a home and there aren't enough homes.
It's a lot of apartments. A lot of apartments.
There's just not enough. There's more people than homes available right now. And so we've seen in high interest rate environments, people still buy homes.
Mm-hmm.
When interest rates theoretically decrease, there's a lot of speculation that the demand's obviously still going to be there if not go up, which if anything might just drive up prices. Who's to say?
No, wait a minute. So interest rates go down, it drives up for the prices of the home?
If there's still not enough supply.
Oh, so I see what you mean. Okay, yeah. What about refis?
Well, refinancing. Yeah, refinancing happens more frequently as rates drop and less frequently as rates go up because you want to lock in that rate for whatever extended period of time that you deem appropriate. But to Cameron's point, I mean, again, now we talk about housing and you can break it apart and kind of peel back whichever layer of the onion you want to at this point. But, you know, a lot of times when we start looking at the consumer price index, which is how we evaluate what inflation is, how that's impacting things, if the Fed needs to make a decision. One of the key components to that consumer price index is new home builds, not transactions of existing homes, but new home builds. So to Cameron's point, and again, if we think about businesses as a whole, if you're going to properly leverage yourself and take money from the bank to say, hey, I want to have a brand new development on this 60 acres of land. I'm planning on putting in 110 homes, whatever the case may be. Well, I may go to the bank and say, let me go and get a $100 million loan so I can start the construction process, buy the land, develop it, and then let me go back and say, okay, well, now let me say that I'm going to list those homes at $700,000 a pop. Well, now I've instantly made money because I'm going to be getting essentially $700 million back at that point. And I got to pay off my debt. I've got to pay the bank back, but I'm going to pocket that money. Well, now maybe I want to flip that money immediately into the next development project. Maybe if rates are high, I don't have that plot of land that's necessarily out there. Maybe I don't want to take out that higher interest bearing loan. So it does have, again, several other factors that play into it. But when you, again, take a look at it, like actual home purchases, yes, they tend to happen more when we have lower interest rates. But to Cameron's point, with the American dream being what it is right now and with some of the other areas that our country is growing, a lot of people have been buying just as quickly, even though rates have been higher than what most people would say is normal. But like John Sestino always tells us, when he went out and bought his first house, I think he said he was paying a 16% interest rate, and he was tickled pink about that. Because he was like, yeah, and I was also having a CD that I was investing in that was paying me 18% interest. And, you know, I look at myself and I'm like, when I locked in our first mortgage before we refied, it was at 4.5%. And I was like, that's a little high. And I'm sitting back thinking, that's nothing compared to where things are at now. So it's all about perspective. It's all about, you know, the recency bias, like we talked about, what's been going on here lately. That can kind of influence our decisions or our thoughts one way or another.
Does this situation impact anybody outside the U.S.? Does it impact the stock market? Does it impact like, we talk a lot about real estate investments of different kinds. Does it affect those? Or is it a separate conversation?
I think the one thing I think of is, you kind of brought up earlier, is the idea that who's using these rates that they're adjusting. Well, one way or another, it's a bank, and who's going to the bank, and, you know, who are the main customers of banks? Their businesses. So yeah, they're probably not directly affected, but if rates go down, big businesses, you know, and S&P 500 might be more willing to expand their business by taking on and using debt to do that. So, you know, they're more inclined to go into more debt. But then if that turns around, obviously works out for them or doesn't work out for them by doing that, that can have that effect on the stock market.
My brain immediately goes to all of the vacant office buildings in big cities. New York's really struggling right now with that. And you can drive downtown Columbus and you can see that with the hybrid situation, there's a lot of space, you know, being leased and for sale. I wonder if that'll make a difference there. People, businesses will be more interested in buying into those spaces.
I mean, that's an entirely separate conversation at that point, because you got to have butts in the seats in order for it to be worthwhile. And if companies are adapting to a hybrid policy or a remote work policy, yeah, you are going to be less inclined to get that, you know, picturesque office where you have everyone continuing to be in one single spot. So not that I'm saying that the pandemic really threw a wrinkle effect into commercial real estate, but that is one area that's definitely been impacted by it. Now, we may see that change and people may go back to, you know, that 9-to-5 being required to be in office. It seems like there are a lot of bigger companies that are making that shift right now. But the biggest thing that we're seeing here, and to your point, what other ripple effects are there? I mean, so, yeah, it's not just the U.S. that is impacted by the Fed adjusting rates. It impacts our national debt picture. It impacts what we may be able to help out or loan to other foreign countries. So it's not just the U.S. It's also impacting more of the global aspect. And this is why we always say, you know, while everyone may have a bias based off of whichever country they're in, thinking that it's one of the best options, we really are in a global economy at this point. So we can't just say, hey, let's just flip a switch and change things because it'll change things just for us here in this country. No, it's going to have a bigger impact for sure.
From the observation of a person, it seems crazy that the feds are trying to help by lowering rates. Meanwhile, they're raising like credit or interest rates on savings accounts and so forth. And I understand the basic reason why they have to make up the money somewhere, right? And that's the bottom line.
So what that's about. Well, we saw a lot of like the high yield savings accounts that really started to creep up with their interest rates as the Fed increased rates. So when we see the Fed start to cut rates, you're likely not going to see that one for one. And it may take a little bit longer than, you know, hey, a decision is made on a Wednesday. By Tuesday of the following week, maybe my interest rate's been cut. It may not be that quick, but certainly it is going to have a ripple effect. And for those online accounts that do have somewhat of a variable rate, yeah, you are going to start to see a shift. I mean, like even when you have instances of, you know, rates being cut, that CD that you may have locked in 12 months ago that's paying you 5%, well, when that reaches its maturity and you decide, well, what do I do with this money now? You may be getting a fraction of that as far as interest. So you may be less inclined to keep it in a CD and maybe try to find something that will give you a better interest rate, a better return opportunity, whatever the case may be.
It's a big puzzle, big chess game. That's where you guys come into the picture. This is actually a great stop point. This is what we do every day. So if you're interested in more content, please stay tuned. We'll have another show for you next week. We appreciate you for joining us. Thank you very much. That was great.
You got it.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.